Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Well, hello, Daz.
Hello, Peter. How are you today?
I'm okay, because I've gone through one of those life traumas, which is moving house. So,
I'm glad it was that life trauma, Peter, not one of the others.
Oh, don't start with that again. Just behave. I thought you were going to be nice this year, and it's not working out. No, I've moved house, and I'm mostly settled in. I'm in my new office now, so that's all sorted. That makes me feel comfortable and happy. So it's been an interesting few weeks.
Good. Well, I'm glad we're back. It's been a while since we've done one of these, and subject to the rules of this year, I get to choose the subject again, don't I, Peter?
You do. Shall we go for it?
Go for it, Peter. Ask the question.
Then. So, Daz, tell me, what is the squid of the day?
Well, Peter, I've been reflecting on the topics that we've talked about in the past, and it's interesting, I think. We explore the sort of the psyche of leadership and how our sort of emotional and intellectual capabilities, I mean, not ours, of course, but, you know, how one's emotional and intellectual capabilities sort of interact to provide your sort of unique manifestation of what you do. And, you know, we've talked before about how difficult life can be sometimes, how tough work can be, and how people do amazing things every day and just manage to prevail and continue to apply their practice whilst, you know, the world can be tricky, the personal lives can be tricky. And so we've talked about resilience before, haven't we? That was Spare 18, if you remember, Peter.
Yep. And I love the way you actually even know the numbers. It's
And the precursors, you know, we talked about the importance of hope with respect to the resilience topic. That was Squid 13, by the way.
Yeah.
And then prior to that,
building up to something, aren't you?
Optimism, Squid 8.
Optimism.
And that was a popular one, actually, which was good. And I'd like to spend some more time in this area on another precursor to resilience. Let's say courage and determination. I think they're very important attributes in terms of the way people conduct themselves and the way leadership manifests itself, actually. But, you know, courage and determination is a bit of it's a funny phrase, really. And so I thought, I bet there's a word in another language that sort of speaks to exactly what I want to say here. And I found one, Peter. So today, okay. I want to talk about SISU. SISU, S-I-S-U. So SISU is a Finnish word which has a wonderful definition. It means bravery, resilience, hardiness. It also has flavors of determination, stoicism, tenacity of purpose, grit. It's also actually quite an amusing film, but that's another topic for another day. Okay. So today, Peter, we're going to talk about SISU.
Oh, okay.
Well, that went down well, didn't it?
Okay, I'm now thinking this is going to be really interesting when I write up the notes for the podcast. Okay, so the squid of the day is SISU.
Yes, and because it's a topic that intrigues me, we have a guest today, Peter, actually. We have someone joining us who I think characterises a lot of those attributes, and I'd like to welcome Donna. So, hello, Donna.
Hello, Des. Hello, Peter. Thank you.
Oh, it's so nice to have you.
Welcome to the podcast.
It's so nice to have another speaker on the podcast. I know people.
Oh, right, that's it. I'm off.
I'm very jealous right now. But Donna, I mean, we wanted to chat with you today, and you heard that we're doing SISU as a topic. And you, Donna, are an ultra marathon runner, I believe. Is that the correct terminology, Donna, to apply?
You are spot on. Yes, I'm proud to call myself an ultra marathon runner.
And so tell me and tell our listeners, for those that aren't familiar with this discipline, so what is an ultra marathon then?
Well, in its formal sense, and I did have to Google it, is that anybody that runs a distance beyond a marathon distance, which is 42 kilometres. So anything beyond that is deemed ultra marathon. And for me personally, my goal is the 100 kilometre ultra marathon. That's the one I always target for annually and do all my pre-training for.
I mean, we're going to come to the question why, Donna, because I mean that is an extraordinary thing.
That's a big question in my mind. Why Daz knows I'm not one for exercise.
But
I didn't get where I am today by exercising.
But the reason, you know, I wanted to talk with you about this, Donna, because you and I have chatted about this, and, you know, so impressed with the way you conduct yourself, you know, through this passion of yours. But I wanted to talk with you and Peter about, so, you know, what does this allow for, this sort of Sisu word? Because, you know, let me just perhaps frame it a little bit. I think sort of having courage and determination when you're embarking upon your journey, I think it does facilitate, you know, coping with adversity. I think it allows for personal growth because you're pushing your boundaries by definition if you're doing something you're uncomfortable with. I think there's something to do with fulfillment here, you know, living your best life. And I think there's something around Sisu, courage and determination, which is about dealing with life's travails, which is where I started from. You know, that, you know, we're all, you know, fully flawed human beings. We all deal with life, and life has, for all its joys, brings trauma and mourning and personal issues and work challenges. And so wanted to sort of explore, Donna, why, and then perhaps how does your ultra marathon running passion, how does that help you? What have you learned from that that helps you perhaps speak to Sisu and coping with adversity? So why don't we then go to Peter's question. So why do you do it, Donna? Why are you an ultra marathon runner?
Oh, gosh. The fabric of it's who I am. I define myself by my running, and I guess I've, without intentionally setting out to it, I've built myself a brand in this corporate world of, you know, being able to execute projects and get NPS scores. People know me more so as being Donna who loves running rather than Donna that chases NPS scores and you know, on-time delivery. So it is who I am, and running takes me to new places. It helps me meet new people and really helps me understand something about myself. Every time I run, I find that I uncover another component of me, and that does come into all those Sisu factors of being brave, being courageous, having grit, the intention to succeed, and sometimes dealing with not necessarily failure, because I'd never deem that I've failed, but also not going to plan A is my sometimes what I deem as being that resilient factor of you didn't achieve your initial goal that you set out to achieve. So yeah, the essence of it is who I am, and I find that is something that makes me feel unstoppable and gives me that outlet that I need away from corporate Donna to being Donna the runner.
That's so interesting. Thank you. And by the way, Peter, personal branding was squid number 20.
Thank you very much. Is this your specialised subject for a mastermind or something? So, Donna, you mentioned NPS, and for anybody listening didn't understand that, that means it's a net promoter score. It just shows how much love our customers have for us, and they have a lot of love for us, of course, thanks to the work of Donna and many other people inside the organisation. But Donna, the thing that always strikes me, and it's going away from the kind of, well, it's still running, but I always look on LinkedIn when you arrive in a city, because the first thing you seem to do is get off the plane, dump your bag, and then go for a run around the entire city. Is that kind of therapeutic, or does that re-energize you after the travel?
Absolutely. Those city runs actually give me an intense exhilaration and euphoria. So it's almost known as the runner's high. The moment I get into a new city, I have to explore it. And the best way to explore a city, as we know, is on foot. And for me, I cover so much more distance because I can run the city. But you take so much in, and there's also that flexibility of saying, no, I'm going to turn left, or I'll turn right, or I'll head down to the harbour, or I'll head through this park, or that doesn't look too interesting. I might just turn around and head back now. So there is, I set out on these exploratory new city runs just to see how far I can go and see what I can find along the way. And I come back feeling a lot more connected to the city, and then ready to go. I'm positioned. I've released some of the pent up exhaustion that happens after sitting on planes. You sort of feel like you should be energized because you sat on a plane, but you're pent up exhausted from sitting on a plane and arriving to these beautiful cities and experience that. So, you know, that is that mental and physical release that I get out of running a city the moment I arrive.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I do a little bit of running, Donna, as you know, and that's also one of my joys, just running and exploring places I don't know. I think there's something about, you know, you get your full sensory appreciation of a place, don't you? It's the sights, it's the smells, it's the sounds, it's the people, it's the back streets, and you know, just so many adventures. I got stones thrown at me once in Saudi Arabia when I was running, which that's a story for another day. I probably shouldn't have been wearing those shorts actually on reflection, but you interact, don't you, with the locale and the people in a way that's, I think, perhaps unique to running in a strange place. So, I get that. And I mean, going back to the topic of Sisu, does that word resonate with you as an attribute, Donna?
Oh, most certainly, because with every run, and particularly when you sign up for new runs, so you don't know the terrain, you don't even know how to get there half the time. You sort of have to navigate your way, because we ultra marathon runners are known to go on runcations rather than vacations. We plan a weekend around an ultra marathon run in a new town that we've never been to, and it's terrain that we've never truly experienced. So it does require, quite a bit of dealing with the uncertainty. You won't know the terrain. You don't know how tough it's going to be. You don't know the weather. You don't know what gear you need to bring. So you're always prepared for any circumstance. And typically when we do ultra marathon running and you're in trails, your mandatory gear pack is quite extensive. It goes anything from, well, I'm in Australia, so we need a snake bite kit as a mandatory item, as well as, compass, an insulated blanket, some basic pain relief if you need that along the way, water, nutrition. So you're well prepared. You have to be well prepared for anything that comes your way. Therefore, the resilience and the preparedness really comes to play. And that's, I know that resilience was one of your Sisu characters. But when you hear the course notes, when you start to read the course notes for some of these ultras, and they go for 100 kilometres, and you're in absolute varying terrain, and you're scaling mountains, you're climbing over rock faces, you're doing river crossings, there's really treacherous territory, and you need to be brave, absolutely brave, to take all that territory. And particularly one course that I do, if you were to have a serious injury, you'd press the emergency panic button, and the only way out is through helicopter. And so you're out there on your own.
Wow.
Yeah, you need to be brave.
Leading on from Daz, and we are going to come back at some time in the future, Daz, to the story of Daz being stoned in Saudi Arabia.
I'm not stoned, Peter, because I think that has a different relevance in that particular country. But I had
I write the notes up, it'll be a stoning. Don't worry about it. Donna, just doing what you've described is phenomenal from my point of view in that sort of determination and drive to achieve that. But maybe if you have a story about perhaps a real Sisu moment in one of those ultra marathons that things perhaps didn't go as smooth as you'd like.
Yeah, and I will liken it just, I'll relate the story to my most recent, which is my last heart-to-heart run that I did. And I thought I'd done enough preparation to really get me the whole distance that I needed to go without having to do a layover at one of the huts. And I was keeping my times beautifully, and I was checking into all the checkpoints with a lot of contingency. I had a good 3 to 4 hours ahead of me, and I just felt like I was flying the whole way. I was really optimistic. I was just so certain. And I actually started the event, and the events incidentally started at 5 a.m. in the morning, so you're up quite early. And I was at that start line, absolutely determined to cross the finish line in 18 to 20 hours later. And I only had that plan A and never had a plan B. I thought I was well and truly prepared. This is my third go at doing the run, and I knew the terrain ahead of me, and I knew that I could conquer it. But I was never, ever anticipating I needed to revisit and alter that plan from a plan A and get a plan B. So it was only until I was out on this ridgeline called Crosscut Saw, and it goes for about 17 kilometres. And there's a lot of sort of mini peaks along the way, and one of them is called Mount Buggery. And you come out, you have to climb the last one, which is Mount Speculation, and then come out into a car park called Mount Speculation. So there's a lot of...
Well, I thought the car park was called Mount Relief, I would have thought at that point.
More appropriate. Yes, Daz, I'll put that recommendation into the course notes for next year. But, you know, those that tells you just how extreme and how much you need to dig deep as you go across cross-cut saw to get to the very end. And for some unknown reason, whilst I wasn't feeling deflated or I wasn't feeling like it adjusted anything, I looked at my time and I'd actually slowed right down. And there was absolutely no reason or rationale for it. I just slowed. And therefore, I started to do the future calculations, knowing that I still had 22 kilometres ahead of me. And I was going to struggle to meet the final checkpoint, which was at the Halkwa Gap Hut. And once you've done that, you go across back up to Mount Buller into the summit and into the village. And if I miss that Halkwa Gap Hut cutoff, I would have got a did not finish. And so I had to then evaluate, well, what's more important to me? You know, is it more important that I finish the event, or does it matter, do I go hard and fast as far as I can go and get it and get a do not finish? And so as I'm out up on the cross-cut saw, I'm having to evaluate these options and determine my next measurement of success and then implement plan B. So that was really tough for me. That was, you know, it took courage to come to the fact that I was not going to make it in the 18 to 28 hours, and that I needed to build in that we do a layover, an overnight stay in at King's Hut, which gave me an extra 7 hours on my time, which didn't, you know, help, but it's what I had to do because I knew I'd miss. So yeah, the resilience to bounce back was, or bounce forward in this instance, because I had to keep going. There was no going back. I had to just bounce forward and be resilient and say, that's okay. Your plan B will be just as credible. And then there's always next year. Yeah. So, you know, you do get an opportunity to self-reflect and say, you can be strong through this, resilient, and know that your measurement of success, because you can measure success in as many ways possible, I'm still successful regardless of the goal that I set out to achieve.
That's a wonderful story, because you're doing that, you know, whilst in pain and very tired, disappointed. You know, you're being hammered. Your expectations have been just, you know, just thrown over that cliff, and you're reevaluating what it means to succeed. I mean, how do you do that, Donna? Where do you dig into to achieve that refreshed sense of purpose, which was very different from your original sense of purpose? How would you describe that attribute, and what is that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is that unstoppableness that I have in my character, where I do like to be unstoppable, and you know, and I know that I've got things such as strength of mindset, my resilience is there to be able to accept a plan B, and like I said, I measure success in as many ways possible. But you know, this is all self-guided talk that I have to do to myself out on a ridgeline, because you're not in a big pack. It's not like a marathon where you've got, you know, a couple of thousand people running beside you and in front of you and behind you. You know, you are on that ridgeline on your own, and you have 4 or 5 hours on that ridgeline. You come into a check stop, and when you head out, and you've topped up your water bladder and you're off. You've got 3 or 4 hours on your own that you're making your own decisions, and you're keeping yourself in a really strong positive mindset, as well as you said, the complication of pain. You get aches and pains and headaches, and the hardest thing is, you're fighting off dehydration and nutrition issues. So if you get down in one of those elements, that's when you're actually withdrawn. So I end up focusing on some other essentials in that point. And I can remember actually on that crosscut, I was realizing that my energy, my nutrition was actually low. I was I didn't have enough protein, believe it or not. I don't eat. I'm a vegetarian myself, and to get out on that ridge line and not have enough protein was also a bit scary. But I knew I had a protein bar, and I transferred my focus in trying to keep powering myself along with another agenda, and that was the important, which was a bit of survival as opposed to getting to the end game on time, because that could have been another area that would have made me stop midway in the pack. But yeah, the aloneness and the enjoying your own company is another way that gets you to the end, where if you can really enjoy your own thoughts and have that release of just being inside your own head for 20 odd hours and love your own company and find that you can extend your thinking beyond what you you get stopped doing, because you know when we're in a busy world of can you attend to this, you stop from actually thinking beyond just that one thought. You've got to cut it short and address the next item. So yeah, those attributes really came to play in order to get me to the end. But yeah, I can't say it was easy, and I can't say that I was smiling. I do say I also get teary. It's in a very emotional event, and I allow myself to get a little bit teary, and that's a good way of sort of cleansing the soul a little bit. You feel like I've dealt with that negative emotion, and you can get a bit frustrated as well. I don't get frustrated. I just get determined and focused. But teariness comes in. It's not sadness. It's just a bit of reflectiveness, and and then I end up singing songs to myself.
Oh, that's so interesting. You were saying you're inside your head for 20 minutes. I mean, I've been in an airport queue with Peter for an hour, and it's just torture. And Peter starts, he whistles, he often sings to himself. But how do you feel about being in your own head for 20 hours, Peter? Could you manage that?
Oh, it's a special place to be, actually. You know, and I'll admit, I'm going to deviate away from Dad's trying to be mean to me again. So I'll confess, I have been Googling stuff out there, and I was looking actually at things that ultra marathon runners talk about. And there's what I really like, and I think this speaks to what you were talking about just now, Donna, was there's a guy called Tim Noakes who's done about 70 of these ultra marathons and marathons. And he said this, he said, your body will argue that there is no justifiable reason to continue. Your only recourse is to call on your spirit, which fortunately functions independently of logic. Does that resonate?
Yes, most certainly. Because you know what? Your body doesn't give up. It's your mind. Your body is so resilient and so capable. And I can always apply the pain that I'm feeling to somebody else's worse off situation. My grandmother always had this analogy that, you know, she said, Donna, when the going gets tough and if you feel like everything's against you and you had to put all your problems in a package and put that package of problems in the middle of the room with everybody else's. And then you take a package of problems from the middle of the room. She said, I guarantee you take your own back. And she's right that, you know, your set of problems and your set of pain and the set of, you know, the challenges that you're going through at that time are always manageable when you sort them out, when you're willing to face them one-on-one and know that you are unstoppable. And it is the mental over physical that is going to be the thing that trumps all, that your mental drive to succeed and ability to believe in yourself to succeed is what's more so going to get you across the line then, you know, you say, I'm physically can't do it. I mean, there are times, yes, your body can give out because your nutrition and your hydration doesn't serve you well, or you may become injured. But, you know, from a physical perspective, when you talk about exhaustion and can I take another step, you always can. You can always find the energy to take that one more step.
That's a wonderful story. Is your grandmother still with us, Donna?
Sadly, it was only last year that she passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry. What a wonderful story. I would have loved to have her on the podcast. We could have made it a family thing. a small personal example, you know, I've been through rehab a couple of times after, you know, injuries and surgeries are connected with sport and running. And I can completely agree with you that it's the mental thing. Once your body's actually ready to go, it's your mind that plays tricks with you and actually that takes more work. You can go through all the physical preparation, but it's your mind that you have to work on so much, which I'd like to bring you back to sort of, you know, work life and personal life and those wonderful stories you've told, Donna, associated with these physical goals you set yourself. What has that taught you? Not particularly about yourself, but I mean, what has it taught you? And how do you think that relates to, you know, the working life or one's personal life? How, you know, I said in my introduction, I think there is something about Sisu that does allow for personal growth and fulfillment. And so I'm sure what you've described has such relevance to you in your everyday life. I'm just wondering how our listeners can take away the elements that we've been discussing about and apply it to their own journeys, whether that's a sporting journey, a business journey or a personal journey. So, yeah, what has running taught you, Donna? What has ultra marathon running taught you?
It certainly has taught me that I have a competitive streak, and I don't want that to be my trump card. But you know, I do like to work hard to be successful. So it's not about competition to win. It's just bettering myself to ensure that I've always got another goal that I'm chasing. So they're always personal goals. But you know, I can't deny that that's a characteristic of mine in both the play field and the work field. You know, I do like my at work to be successful and to be to win, you know, and not necessarily have a win-win at where there's a loser on the course. It's more how do we all win-win? So you know, in a customer situation, it's like I always look at, well, you want to be, you know, have your needs met, and you want to ensure that your requirements and you win out of this negotiation, and same with us. So I do see that competitive nature coming through, but you know, I also have a real sense of calmness now for adversity, that not everything's easy and not everything is possible. And your mindset and your character play a big part in defining who you are. And when it comes to applying that, where I've felt that adversity, and I didn't have this in my younger years, but now I know that some things are just tough. Some things for other people are really tough. And so my adjusted expectations, particularly within my team, is that I know that not everybody could be a runner like me, just like not everybody can be the best project manager, or not everybody can be the best at delivering customer service, but they may be the best at testing databases or something. So I've learned that, you know, that not everybody can do or achieve at the same level. And that's okay, because you just need to find your sweet spot. You need to find something that is really the fabric of you, that you determine is your success. So it has given me a great appreciation. So not only being competitive, but a deep appreciation for myself and others, and that empathy and acceptance of finding out traits and values of people that are going to make them feel successful.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Donna. This has been such an interesting and inspiring topic, just to listen to you talk about Sisu, what it means to you, and how you apply that to work. And it's allowed Peter a little bit more time to do his research on Google as well. So I think it's been a fantastic squid. And I quite like to conclude, Peter. I think we'll try and draw it together, if I may. So
you can do. My summary is simple. There are three people in this podcast, and it's been amazing. Thank you, Donna.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, thank you so much, Donna. And so perhaps you're just thinking about Sisu and what does it allow for? Perhaps, you know, we do love a list, don't we, Peter, in the podcast? It feels like it allows us to encapsulate some of the learnings or some of the things we've noticed as we talk about these topics. So just thinking about how would we cultivate this? How do we cultivate Sisu and apply it to our work life or to our personal life? And I think, And please chip in, Donna, but what I heard you say was perhaps one of the most important things is preparation and planning. So perhaps said another way, it's about having a clear goal. It's about having a clear goal before you embark on your adventure or your journey or your project or your relationship. We have an objective in mind. And so you have a visualization of what it's going to be like and how you're going to get yourself ready for it, with all that entails, with all the practicalities associated with that. And then as you embark on this adventure, whatever that is, there's a discipline, perhaps a mental discipline. You were describing it as being able to flip from plan A to plan B, to recognize the disappointment and the pain and the hurt and just acknowledge it and move on to the next part of your journey and whatever that's required and however you do that. And then perhaps the way you do that is you describe it as being calm in the face of adversity. We've talked previously about sort of mindfulness and stoicism as being an important attribute of resilience. And, you know, I would summarize that as by saying, and it was so wonderful the way you described the dynamics of this, but, you know, the future is uncertain in whatever we do, but it hasn't been written yet. And so you can choose how you deal with what's in front of you right now. And that is your choice. You can't predict the future, but you can decide how you deal with what's in front of you. And one of the overarching tenets we talked about before is it's really important to be kind to yourself during that process, and don't get assailed by, you know, we talked about imposter syndrome in the past, or the negativity associated with how we tend to be critical of ourselves when we don't achieve our goals. And so choose how you deal with the present, but be kind to yourself. Does that work as a summary, guys?
Spot on. Yes, Daz, I think you really have brought it together. I mean, collectively, all the thoughts that I've been able to share earlier. And, the only thing I'd like to add is just that variation of focus. Something I apply in running is when it gets intense and you do need to understand where you are at this very moment, you look down, but then you can change your focus after that and you can look up and then you start to see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And I think that variation of focus is really important too, that I learn in running, because both are needed. But it does allow you to keep that whole SISU perspective in under management, where sometimes you are looking down on the ground, you've got to watch where your feet are, you've got to dodge rocks, and you've got to ensure you don't fall off the ledge. And then others, you've got to look ahead and look visionary and look strategy and look at the possibilities and you go for those big ambitious goals that you know you can bravely achieve.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Well said, Donna.
I have one question before we close completely. Yeah. How many pairs of trainers do you get through a year?
Oh gosh, yes. Well, I do, because I do because I also do HIIT sessions. It's three a year. I go through three.
That's not so bad. That's pretty good money.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They do max out. You know, I do get to, when they get to, some of them I overtrain in. So it doesn't serve my knees well.
Well, Donna, been a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining us. You are our first guest, and it's been wonderful. So thank you so much for your time today.
It's been an honor. I've really enjoyed speaking with you both. I love the dynamic between the two of you as you head these podcasts. So I'm delighted to be on your podcast and be your first guest.
Oh, thank you, Donna. So I'll leave the final words to you, Peter, I think, today.
The final word is I'm not going to go running, but I will definitely go for a bit of a walk shortly. And thank you, Donna. It's been inspirational.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks, Peter.
Bye then.
Bye.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.